progressive evidence-based treatment that utilizes an FDA-approved tourniquet to reduce blood flow to an extremity during exercise. Blood flow-restricted rehabilitation allows significant strength gains with minimal stress to the involved joint. This is ideal for anyone that is unable to tolerate high-intensity workouts, including pre- and post-surgery. PT Associates of Emporia at 12th and Industrial, 620-208-7878.
All the latest sports news and views, actions and reactions, your questions and comments. This is Saturday Morning Sports Talk on KVOE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, live and local.
Live from Burlingame, Kansas, good morning and welcome into Saturday Morning Sports Talk driven by LongvineAuto.com on 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, KVOE. Blake Cripps here. Well, we got a little bit of late news that our very own Tim Miller was under the weather today, so filling in on the road at the last second here with Dylan in the studio. We've still got a great show lined up for you today. Dylan, good morning to you. Can I hear you?
Good morning, Blake Cripps. Hope you had a great...
It doesn't sound like I can. Okay, well, so we'll have to figure something else out for the later segment. So I'm just going to ramble here, Dylan, for the first little bit and take us to the first break. So we've got, like I said, a good show coming up for you here today. We are going to be joined by Sean Russell. He is the girls' wrestling coach for Emporia High. So that is the plan for that. We will be joined by Sean Russell here in just a little bit. He will be in the studio with Dylan. Also, we've got Mitch Holtis on the line for you. And earlier this week, I had a conversation with Jane Grimley Gunn, the head women's soccer coach at Emporia State University, and so my interview with her is coming up in a little bit, and we'll still be talking with the voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, after yet another improbable Chiefs victory yesterday on Black Friday. There was a meme I saw where, you know, they online, and it was about the Chiefs, and basically the line was, they can't keep getting away with this, and somehow the Chiefs continue to get away with it each and every week. I think that it's fair to have some concern at this point about Kansas City, especially on the defensive end, just in terms of their consistency. The reason I say that, because the defense has typically been the, you know, most consistent part of the team, but when you have a Raider team come in and they are able to run the football like the Raiders did, that's a little bit concerning for this reason. They were the last ranked rushing offense in the country, the last one. Okay, so they had the worst rushing offense in the National Football League. And the fact that they were able to continuously, you know, get, you know, 5 to 10 yard plays in the second half especially, was a little bit concerning. And, I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is a winner. There's no doubt about that. But the offense continues to just not be in sync. Now, we're judging the Chiefs' offense against, you know, one of the best offensive, you know, periods that any team has ever had in the NFL, and that's against what the Chiefs have done to themselves. They have done this to themselves to a certain extent, just because they have, you know, laid out what is possible offensively. And so we understand what they are capable of when everything is clicking the right way. And so to a certain extent, Kansas City has built a standard for themselves that maybe is not fair. When you're used to Patrick Mahomes throwing for 50-plus touchdowns and, you know, having a touchdown-to-interception ratio of like 5 to 1 and throwing for 5,000 yards, you know, it's not what that was, which we thought, I think we believed at the time, because that's how offenses were going, and it didn't seem like defenses had any way to slow them down. It was an overreaction, but we thought, okay, this is just the new norm of football. This is how football is going to be now. You're going to have to be able to get quarterbacks who can do this in order to win championships. And now the pendulum has swung back the other way, like it often does in these sports, where the offense will have complete control and dominate the sport. And it appears that defenses have maybe not necessarily totally figured out, but they have caught up. I don't think there's any way to discount the fact that defenses have caught up to what the Chiefs are doing and what other offenses like that are doing. And people blame cover two and say, oh, we need to ban cover two and all this. I mean, they've been running cover two for years. So that, to me, that's absolutely insane. But, you know, I do think that to a certain extent, the Chiefs have been able to make adjustments. I feel like a lot of the plays that they're running are the right plays. They're running the right offense. But Mahomes this year just has not been on sync and on target. He has missed guys. I mean, there was the play in the end zone yesterday where Travis Kelce he starts to right, going to the right, and he's going kind of on like a little fly pattern, and it's a busted play in the backfield. So Patrick Mahomes is scrambling a little bit, and Kelce is going to, you know, Mahomes right, and then cuts back to the left. And if the pass had been thrown to the left, he's open. But, you know, because Mahomes has to get rid of it a little early, he has to go based on where he thinks he's going right then, and he throws it to the opposite shoulder, and Kelce can't make the play. I think the real concern that I have right now, and that most Chiefs fans would have, would be the offensive line play. I mean, these are a couple of tackles that get penalized a lot, not just for false start, not just for holding, also for lining up incorrectly. It happened again yesterday. So these are, you know, it's a pretty heavily penalized offensive line. And we've also seen opposing defenses, when they really need to get pressure, they have been able to get pressure onto Mahomes, and it's forcing Mahomes to make these decisions faster instead of allowing plays to develop, and instead of having, you know, being able to just kind of sit back in the pocket and scan and go through his progressions. You know, he has to start running for his life a lot faster than he used to. You know, we're used to seeing him just kind of sidestep and just read the play and then look out there and see what becomes available. And, you know, I think they used the term in the broadcast yesterday, you know, this, you know, play that backyard style of football. Well, you know, that's not possible when you don't give your quarterback time to allow these routes to come open. And so the Chiefs yesterday with Mahomes, and I watched like 95% of this game here on, for those of you, you know, unfortunately it was on Amazon Prime Video. So for those of you who weren't able to watch it, had to listen to Mitch on Country 101.7. I'm sure you heard Mitch saying the very same thing, but it was certainly a game in which Mahomes never looked comfortable in the pocket and never really had the time that he really, really wanted. Now, there were some positives. It was great to see Isaiah Pacheco back. He looked fairly strong in the game. I'm sure there was some sort of a pitch clock. I'm sure that there was some sort of a, you know, some sort of a, I guess, plan to not run him just 100%. They've got a nice stable of running backs now with Perine and Hunt in there along with Pacheco, so it was good to see him back. I also thought maybe in the second half, in terms of the play calling, there weren't a ton of running plays called in the second half. I'm not 100% sure of why that was, because I felt like in the flow of the game, the Chiefs were getting some pretty good gainers, but I think of their first 25 plays in the second half, I feel like only four of them were rushes. I'm not 100% sure why that was, and I don't feel like this is necessarily a thing where, oh, the Chiefs obviously, you know, they need to make wholesale changes. Most of these plays that they missed on, they were just right there. They didn't miss by much. But the issue is that at this point in the season, whatever week that we're in, yeah, with they're 11-1 now, so week 12, 13, I guess, if you include the bye, the Chiefs are consistently missing these plays at this point in the year. We can say that. They're consistently missing these plays. Now, they're not missing them by a whole lot, but they have consistently missed them. So what is the remedy for that? I'm not 100% sure what the remedy is for that. Again, we're going to have, we do plan to have Mitch on the line with us today. So we'll be talking about this game with him coming up here in about 35 minutes or so. Also coming up for you today, we've got a double dose of Kansas athletics today, football and basketball. Kansas State football is in action today as the college football playoff continues to maybe try to wean its way to down to where it's supposed to be. You know, people have talked about this college football playoff, and you know, the SEC is feeling like it's the disrespected conference at this point. Oh, well, we're cannibalizing themselves, and you know, our brand of football is just so much better. The losses, you know, don't mean as much here as they do in another league, just because our league is so tough. And I totally understand that. It's the same argument that the MIAA uses for football, and it's, to a large extent, it's true. You know, the SEC is a different kind of conference because of all the great football programs that are in it. But at some point, at some level, you have to take the losses for what they were. And at some point, who's to say that a loss to, you know, Northwestern is, you know, so much worse than a loss to Vanderbilt? Like since when does Vanderbilt get, you know, SEC protection as, oh, well, they play in the SEC, so, you know, our losses, you know, mean so much less than they do other leagues, and so you need to be, you know, you need to look at three-loss SEC teams the same as you look at a one-loss Group of Five team or a two-loss Big Ten team. You know, how long do you get to ride that train out? Because with this era of college football playoff and college football conference, especially with conference expansion, you know, there was a real argument to be made for a while when you had only 12 SEC teams that the quality of the league from top to bottom was actually very strong. Now, you had Vanderbilt that was way, way, way in the cellar of that league, but you could argue with the top six and top eight that it was pretty good. At this point, everybody's got 16 teams in their league. Every single conference has got eyesores in their league that they, you know, the skeletons in the closet that they'd rather you just ignore when you look at the strength of a league. I didn't know that it was going to be Oklahoma State this year in the Big 12, but Oklahoma State's been terrible this year in conference play. You know, a loss to Oklahoma State, if that would have happened yesterday, you know, to a conference, you know, a college football playoff contender, there's no way, no matter how strong the rest of the Big 12 is, you can't look at a loss to a winless Oklahoma State and say, oh, well, you know, this loss isn't that bad. Look how strong the Big 12 is. And the same with the Big 10, with your Northwesterns and the other team, the Rutgers of the Big 10. You know, you lose to those teams. Don't talk to me about how strong the top half of your conference is. Okay? If you lose to a Vanderbilt, I don't care how strong Ole Miss and Alabama and all the rest of these teams are. So what? You still lost the game that you weren't supposed to win. And so there are these complaints now because of how everything is bunched up now. And it's exact, when I had a show on Sports Talk Radio in Wichita about the time when they were trying to, you know, think about going to the playoff and, okay, what's the right number? Should it be four? Should it be eight? And everything is happening exactly as I thought it would. I'm not saying that I have, like, this great precognition of the future, but I said at the time, college coaches are always going to complain when they don't get to go. It happens in college basketball every year. And we let 68 teams into the tournament, and what happens? You know, okay, so you've got the automatic teams that go in for basketball, and then you've got your conference with the conference championships, then you've got your 31 or so at-large teams. And so the teams that are 32, 33, 34 in the at-large are going to complain that they didn't get to go. And what has happened in college football? We went to four, and the teams that were 5, 6, and 7 complained that they didn't get to go. I said, if you expanded this to 128 teams, the teams that were 129, 130, 131, they would complain that they would not get to go. And here we are at 12 teams, at what's happening. The SEC is saying we're not going to get in enough teams, and the teams that are going to get left out, where are they? They're probably going to be about that 13, 14, and 15 in the overall polling. They're the ones that are not going to get left in. Okay, so it doesn't matter what sport it is. The coaches of the teams that are right on the cut line that don't get into the dance are not going to be happy. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it's always been, the way it's always going to be. So, you know, you asked for a system where you have the coaches, where you have eyes on the system, humans actually running it. You know, we had something designed that was going to look at everything, the strength of schedule, that was going to, you know, be able to compute, okay, is a two-loss SEC team better than a winless Group of Five team or a one-loss Big Ten team? We had that system. It was called the Bowl Championship Series, the BCS computers. We had that system. And people hated it because they could not understand why we would allow a computer to do the work of a human, and, oh, we need to use the eye test and all this other junk. And so now that it's come full around back the other way, where we only have humans, and sure, they've got, you know, their Massey ratings or whatever they use in Division I, strength of schedule, RPI, all those things, key performance indicators, to look at these teams and rank and judge these teams. And now they're saying, oh, well, you know, we can't let these humans do it because they're only going to look at the win-loss record. They don't understand, you know, Kirby Smart down at Georgia, like, oh, invite the committee down here. They don't understand what it's like here in the SEC. They don't get that, how difficult it is here. So you can't have it both ways. You either let a computer look at the strength of your league, be able to instantly compute what you've done in the non-conference and figure it out, or you allow humans to do it. But you don't get to complain about one or the other if this is what you wanted. And I think that there are some questions, especially if the Big 12 only gets in one. Chris Klieman made it on his, you know, made those comments on his, in his pregame press conference this week ahead of Farmageddon. Said, you know what, we need to look at some things scheduling-wise and be able to determine what's going to be the best for our league. Because the SEC was rightly criticized for years because they would take basically a week off in the middle of the season to play, you know, Troy or whoever it is. And, you know, you'd see, okay, Alabama's playing North Alabama, A&M, and they're winning 76-0 in the middle of the season. And, like, why are they just allowed to do that? And the reason was because their strength of schedule in the SEC was believed to be so strong that they could absorb a non-quality win like that they could take that. Well, at this point, Chris Klieman's saying, you know, why shouldn't we be doing that in the Big 12? Let's schedule a Division II team. Let's schedule an FCS team. Let's schedule a Group of Five team. You know, we can't afford to take losses to our top teams. We have got to get two-loss teams into this conversation because two-loss teams are going to make it, where three-loss teams, you're basically out. It's like Division II. You have a three-loss team in certain super regions, you're just not making the playoffs. And in college football, you've got to have under three losses in order to make the postseason. It's just the way it's shaking out, at least this year. And granted, some of this is an overreaction. It's 1 year. We don't have any long-term, you know, data set to analyze what the teams get in do. But there's no question expanding the playoff is just going to move where the coaches that are complaining are. So you add four more teams in, coaches 17, 18, 19 are going to complain. You move it to 32, coaches 33, 34, 35 will complain. One guy that's not going to complain is Sean Russell. He is the head girls wrestling coach for Emporia High. He'll be joining us next. And we've also got Jane Grimley-Gunn, the head soccer coach for the Emporia State Women, wrapping up her first season. So we will be back with them in just a moment here on Saturday Morning Sports Talk, driven by LongvineAuto.com.
At Longmont Auto Plaza in Emporia, why wait until Black Friday to get great savings offers when you can get Black Friday savings right now? Savings like up to $9,300 off MSRP on our new 2024 Chevy Silverado 1500 LTZ Crew Cab with Costco membership. Or lease a 2024 Chevy Blazer EV, only $399 per month for 36 months with Costco membership. And come see our inventory of top quality pre-owned models in stock now. And Black Friday priced. So don't wait another day for Black Friday savings on new Chevy models. Come into Longbine Auto Plaza in Emporia today or visit us 24/7 at longbineauto.com. Chevy, together, let's drive. Blazer lease based on 36 months, 12,000 miles per year with $4,100 cash or trade equity plus tax, title, and fees due at signing with approved credit.
I'm Ryan Radke with This Week in the NCAA on Westwood One. Congratulations to the Northwestern women's field hockey team who took home the D1 championship last weekend. The Wildcats defeated St. Joseph 5-0 to win the program's second national title. Northwestern is led by head coach Tracy Fuchs, who just completed her 16th season on the job. The program captured their first field hockey title in 2021, but the past 2 years they've lost to North Carolina in the national championship match. Last year, the Wildcats were missing one of their stars, Maddie Zimmer, who redshirted to train with the U.S. Olympic team. She returned to the squad this year, and in the title victory over St. Joe's, she finished with 2 goals and an assist. Zimmer and her fellow seniors certainly left a lasting legacy on the Northwestern program.
Coming in with this class specifically, you know, my best friends that we went through COVID together, and we won the first one here, and now we get to win our second. It's really indescribable, I think. You know, ugh, I have chills. But, yeah, it's really, really special.
An Ivy Leaguer aces his test next on This Week in the NCAA.
While retinitis pigmentosa takes Mark's vision, his family gives him hope, whether at the family business or at home with his wife and sons. He knows he's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding retinal diseases, providing hope to people with vision loss. And for Mark, winning the fight means being there for his family. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
Columbia University tennis junior Michael Zhang, who won the NCAA men's singles title last weekend. The individual tennis championship moved from the spring to the fall for this academic year. Zhang lost in the singles title 6 months ago, but is now the first man from an Ivy League school to win the individual tennis championship since 1922. That's This Week in the NCAA. I'm Ryan Radke on Westwood One.
Live and local sports news and views. Saturday morning sports talk on 96.9 FM and 1400 AM KVOE.
All righty, and welcome back to Saturday morning sports talk driven by LongbineAuto.com. Dylan Shorewood here in studio with Emporia High Girls Wrestling Coach Sean Russell. Coach, good morning to you.
Good morning, Dylan. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And yourself?
It was good. A little bit more this weekend, but it is what it is. So
it is. Can't beat food and family and friends.
Well, let me turn your mic up just a little bit more. Coach, you've been able to practice a couple weeks and got some challenge matches coming up today.
Yes, so both the boys and girls, we have our varsity challenge matches starting at 2:30 in the main gym at EHS.
Yeah, I know we had Coach Madrano on with us last week. Are you kind of doing kind of similar things than what he does and have everyone wrestle and you're trying to set your lineup and everything?
No, we have a lot of girls gone for family and stuff. We kind of try to do them throughout the week and then hope everyone is around to do them today.
All right, Coach, I think that you guys can hear me now. Dylan, would you confirm that
Yes.
You guys can hear me?
Yes, Blake, I got you.
Awesome. Thanks. We've got it figured out. We've had to do this at the last second here, but I think we've got it. Coach, let's just start with, you know, Dylan asked you a couple questions about this year. Go back to last year. You guys had some state qualifiers. Overall, how would you grade your team out from the 2023-24 season?
I think we did excellent. Last year we were combined with 6A. So, I mean, what's that? 72 teams we got to compete against, I believe. 36 and 30. Yeah. Finishing where we finished, couldn't been happier with them. We had a couple really close matches that we would have wished went our way, but they didn't. But, we're still proud of them no matter what.
And, Coach, you have, I believe, five is what I saw preseason ranked, led by Alexa Castillo at 235.
Yes, we have five of them. It's very exciting. We have a really strong team this year. I do believe a couple of them will get a ranking also. You know, they just got to perform to the best of their ability and give 100%, and I think the rest will take care of itself.
Coach, looking at the wrestlers that you guys have back, how much experience do you guys have back off of last year's team?
We're missing three starters from last year's team. We're missing Virginia Munoz, mm-hmm. and Katina Kiyosabunhong, mm-hmm. which were, you know, some good hammers there. But we have some girls that, you know, shifted weights last year because of those girls where they were at, and they're kind of falling into their natural weight where they should be at on the team, and I think they'll do really great.
And, Coach, how beneficial was it for Keisha to split 6A and 5A back to normal? So you're just competing against 5A, and you're not competing against the Washburn Rules or the Manhattans, you know, at state. But I know you're going to see those at league. But what does it mean that Keisha decided to break up 6A and 5A in girls wrestling?
It just means that girls wrestling is growing exponentially. I mean, you look at all the teams where we started out with 8, 9, and now, you know, most of the bigger 5A schools and all, you know, some of the 6A schools, you know, we have enough to fill out, you know, two lineups there, both the full varsity.
Well, Coach, and I know that, you know, based on the growth of the program, the growth of Emporia High School Wrestling, if Tim were here today, if he were feeling well, I know that he would be asking you about this year's numbers. So how have you seen the program continue to build in terms of the girls that you're getting out on Emporia?
We're getting a lot. I think we have about 45 girls this year, which is up about 12 from last year. Each year we've grown about 10 girls.
Wow.
You know, kind of sat down with Coach Olson and Tovar and Keo, and, you know, we kind of developed a five-year plan on how, you know, we would like to grow it, and I think we're right on those numbers. Eventually we'd like to get up to about 60 girls.
So do you feel like, I know a couple of years ago when you had Maddie Griffin and, you know, when she was a senior as well, and then you had a lot of young pups, you know, have to step in, but it just feels like they're growing. And I could tell you about one who's probably caught my eye the most, seeing her grow over the last 2 years, and I know she's has high expectations this year, and that's Kinsley Medrano.
She's grown very much over in maturing her technique wise and everything. Is she's getting really good at that. She knows her strengths and her weaknesses, and just got to coach to that.
Coach, looking at your roster so far, I think Dylan asked you about this, but, you know, how close are you guys to setting the weights for everybody that you have? And I'm sure with the influx of new girls, there's probably some work to be done to kind of learn your new roster members and figure out what weight they're going to be the best at.
Yes, 100%. We have some really good freshman girls that have come in. You know, we don't want to quite throw them to the wolves, so we'll let them wrestle some JV matches to kind of get their technique down and some match-like situations in there that they might encounter if they do get up to the varsity level. We were returning a lot of girls. You know, we got a great junior class and a good senior class that's coming in, and then some sophomores that'll fill in the spot along with some freshmen.
And, Coach, you guys open the season Wednesday night with Cave of Mount Carmel down in Wichita, and then you have your home tournament. I know last year the girls' portion was at EMS. What's the situation? And, you know, especially when the boys' JV has their big tournament, which always is a big turnout. So.
Oh, yes, they have a huge turnout. We'll be back at EMS this year,
okay.
You know, kind of get to showcase their new gym to everyone.
Awesome.
The wrestling. Yes, it's a beautiful facility. And, you know, Mr. Trujillo is more than welcoming us in there to use it.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate the time today. Anything else that we missed before we let you go here today as you guys get set to get the 2024-25 season started here very, very soon?
Thank you guys for your support and everything, and we'll just give it our all, and we look forward to a great season.
And don't forget the challenge matches, both for the
boys
and the girls.
Yes, that's what I was forgetting.
Yes, both boys and girls will have challenge matches today at 2:30 at the main gym at EHS.
All right. Well, thanks, Coach, for coming in.
Yes, thank you so much. Some great matches for sure.
Appreciate it, Coach. 2:30 once again as they will wrestle, and that's a boys and girls wrestling event over at the high school today. Let's step aside here. Earlier this week, I talked with Jane Grimley Gunn, the head women's soccer coach at Emporia State, to wrap up this season, and then Mitch is coming up after that here on Saturday Morning Sports Talk, driven by LongbineAuto.com.
At Longmont Auto Plaza in Emporia, why wait until Black Friday to get great savings offers when you can get Black Friday savings right now? Savings like up to $9,300 off MSRP on our new 2024 Chevy Silverado 1500 LTZ Crew Cab with Costco membership. Or lease a 2024 Chevy Blazer EV, only $399 per month for 36 months with Costco membership. And come see our inventory of top quality pre-owned models in stock now. And Black Friday price. So don't wait another day for Black Friday savings on new Chevy models. Come into Longbine Auto Plaza in Emporia today or visit us 24/7 at longbineauto.com. Chevy, together, let's drive. Blazer lease based on 36 months, 12,000 miles per year with $4,100 cash or trade equity plus tax, title, and fees due at signing with approved credit.
Home inventory in Emporia continues to be tight. A mortgage pre-approval from Emporia State Federal Credit Union can give you a leg up with sellers, proving you're a serious buyer with the means to purchase a home. With a short phone call to Jared Gurman or Isabel Garcia, or easy online application, you can be pre-approved. Tell your realtor you'll be using Emporia State Federal Credit Union to finance your new home. Equal housing lender insured by NCUA, NMLS 424-226.
Live and local sports news and views. Saturday Morning Sports Talk on 96.9 FM and 1400 AM KVOE.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Sports Talk, driven by LongbineAuto.com. Year one of the Jane Grimley Gunn era is in the books, and before the Thanksgiving holiday, I talked with the first-year head coach of the Lady Hornets soccer team to recap her first year in Emporia. Well, Coach, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Year one, as you look back on the 2024 Emporia State soccer season, obviously you guys had high aspirations this year, but year one of a program. At the end of the day, you know, everybody wants to win the national championship every year, but most important thing was making sure that you get things set up. So in terms of getting your program set up for how you'd like it to be long term, how do you judge this 2024 season?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. You always have high expectations, and I think we probably could have maybe done a bit better in key moments, but at the same time, giving ourselves a bit of grace that it was year one, and we are just laying the foundation. I think, honestly, we really started to hit the ground running or hit our stride towards the end, which makes sense. It takes some time to kind of get to that point. And ultimately, by then, it was just really difficult to keep going at that rate, especially with three games in a 10-day span against some of the best in the league. So I think overall, we're content but striving for more.
Looking at just year one, how much more comfortable do you feel being in Emporia? I mean, you know, it's not that long ago. We were talking over at the Sauter Alumni Center. You were getting introduced and meeting your team. How do you feel like the adjustment's gone for you?
It's been so much easier through time, and I can only imagine in a year from now, even just when you're traveling to away games, just knowing kind of the routine and the rhythm. We've played everyone now. We have a better assessment of the league. And we're just more settled, and I could see myself, you know, being here for quite some time and really being comfortable, happy, so I can't complain.
Looking at the team and your seniors this year, I got to talk with both of them on our player profile for football, but Hadley and Haley, obviously you would have loved to have had both of them on the field this year. That would have been great. But how important, you know, they were a part of the previous program. When there's a change in leadership, however that change comes, that's not always the easiest thing for players. How grateful are you that they were able to stick around and that they wanted to be a part of helping you build your program and your foundation here?
No, they're both great kids. And I've been in that situation as a player, so I can relate. It's not easy. And I think they did their absolute best with it and tried to be receptive, tried to be coachable. They had been accustomed to something something different for some time. So it's just always hard to make that change and adjustment. But I think they did their absolute best. And I think Hadley of all really kind of ended the season strong once we started to get into that rhythm. And unfortunately, Haley couldn't play as much as we had hoped, but she was still super positive, great personality to have. So very, very proud of them.
What was that moment like? I asked her, but what was it like for you as a coach when, I mean, obviously you guys started her in the game, had to make an immediate sub, but at least got her out there for senior day. She thought that was, it was pretty meaningful talking with her.
It was special. And it's a bummer, especially for her, because she's been through it with injuries. But to even have that opportunity to be celebrated on your senior day, even if it's not how you'd like, hopefully it's still something to reflect on and think about how positive the whole experience was. Maybe not, you know, the most recent events, sure, but as a whole.
Looking at your team, we're talking with Jane Grimley-Gunn, first-year head coach for Emporia State Women's Soccer. You were coming in, and it was going to be a pretty dramatic system change. Now, with the players that you had coming in, you had about half of a new team, so probably would have been a little different if 90% of the players had returned. But how comfortable do you feel like the players have gotten, both new and returning, with how you guys want to play and hopefully setting you guys up to hit the ground running even quicker in year two coming up in 2025?
I think you nailed it. And I think really it took some time for us to start to understand and get on the same page. And ultimately, we probably got there mid-season. Then towards the latter half of the season, we had to start making some adjustments, prioritizing results a little bit. Injuries, all the things that start to come into play, which is as expected, right? You have to evolve and adapt as the season progresses too. But I think we laid the foundation, and now this spring we can really focus on that understanding, the development, and be able to hit the ground running more so next fall with that level of understanding there.
Well, it's interesting you say evolving and adapting, because the next question I have on my little memo pad here is Abby Bachman. This was a player that you were asking to do things a little bit differently than she had, playing a little bit different position and bringing her to kind of a different role on the field. How do you feel like, and she ended up being, you know, I think she had the second most points for your offense this year. How do you feel like she was able to handle that? How do you feel like that may even continue to evolve in the future for her?
Yeah, so early in the season, we really had Abby in sort of an attacking role, which I think started to change her mindset a little bit. The thing about Abby is she's kind of just good anywhere, and she ended up having to do some other defensive role responsibilities for us just because we really needed her. But ultimately, she was still able to have success and contributions, like you're saying. So hopefully, she got a little bit of the taste of that, and now I think in the future, she could even do more for us in that department.
How much do you, or will you, I think, and with the understanding that there's still quite a bit of time for recruiting left, I don't know, you guys, just like all you coaches, you guys have your commits, prospects, yeah, your recruits up on the big board here. That's that time of year. I guess I'll start with that. How much does your focus change after the season's over to getting into diving in to finding the next Lady Hornets and who's going to be good fits for your program?
It was pretty immediate. Like, there was really not a single day off, if I'm being honest. As soon as we finished, we had an event that weekend. So
I've always told people, you know, they say it's so many coaches tell me it's a 52-week-a-year job, yeah, 364 days a year, and if you get a really good recruit that calls you on Christmas, you're going to take that call.
100%, you're going to make it work. We're really nose-deep in it right now. I mean, I'm sure you've heard with other sports the transfer portal is crazy right now, and that's a very limited window of time that we have to sort of get this done before the holiday, and that's a lot of what I think it is, too, for players. They want to know by a certain date. Usually it's by like Christmas or by something else. So we're really trying to sort out some of those things and get us set for the future.
Well, and looking at, you know, your recruiting, you've already announced, I think, five, yeah, so far. How many more do you feel like you're going to have? And how much do you guys have to wait? Because, you know, the transfer portal giveth, and the transfer portal can also take sure away as well for a number of reasons. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they don't like the school or the coach. You know, circumstances change. But how much do you guys have to kind of wait to figure out how many more that you'll need?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's constantly evolving, like you're saying. I think it could be anything simple, that you could just have something happen in the spring with a player that maybe they just decide for whatever reason they want to be close to home, they want to change their major. You just never fully know. To your earlier question, I think probably five more players, really. Yeah. And for the same reason you're saying, a couple will leave, a couple things will change, and we'd like to be a little bit deeper than we were this season, especially looking towards the MIAA tournament, the national tournament. You just need a few more bodies for when things start to break down and injuries start to happen.
Looking at your recruiting philosophy, because last year when you got hired,
pretty late in the process, especially with trying to bring in a new team. This is kind of your first full year of recruiting. What's your recruiting philosophy in terms of the kinds of players that you want to bring in for your program?
Yeah, I think it has to be the complete player. And I'm sure most coaches will say that. Obviously, the talent is important. Fitting into our style of play is important. We also need players who are coachable. We give our players a ton of information, a lot. So they have to have a good enough IQ and background when it comes to soccer to be able to apply that information quickly. Because as you see, with freshmen coming into the league in any sport, it takes a little bit of time to get acclimatized and start to get rolling. So if they can make that jump quicker because they're able to really apply what we're giving them, that's going to give them a huge advantage.
Jane Grimley Gunn, my guest, Emporia State first-year soccer coach. In terms of your philosophy, how much are you, do you kind of have in your career, you're a young coach, but you've been a head coach elsewhere. As the transfer portal has changed things, I've heard coaches tell me it's changed how they look at freshmen versus junior college versus transfer portal ladies or guys, depending on the sport. But how do you kind of look about trying to develop players over a four-year career versus bringing in JUCOs versus bringing in transfers with that experience that they may already have?
Usually it seems like we're, I don't want to say split 50-50, we're leaning towards bringing in younger players because I think there's the advantage of development. Giving them 4 years to really get sorted, get comfortable in our program, there's a huge advantage to that. At the same time, we're a really young team. We only really graduate two players, so we're still needing a little bit of that experience. Obviously, we'll have a bigger senior class next year, but to sort of supplement that with other players who've kind of been through and done it at the college level will certainly help.
Looking at what you want to do in terms of the team this year, any stylistic changes that you feel like you'd like to make after seeing things play out? Obviously, there are different, you know, you look at different conferences. I'll be the first person to say that my soccer knowledge is probably, like, if yours is up here at the board level, I was at the carpet.
Sure.
But in basketball and football especially, there can be different conferences that will have different style. There's a lot of really good running teams in the GAC for football, by
sure.
The way. In the NSIC, they like to play really up and down and physical. Is there a conference style in the MIAA that you will have to adjust to or recruit to as a head coach?
Honestly, as a whole in the conference, I'd say no. The majority of teams, I will say, like we say in soccer, like to play, meaning they want to keep the ball on the ground. They want to connect passes. There's a few that are a bit more direct, which means they just kind of kick it and go, and they rely on some athletes, but that seems to be more the minority as soccer has progressed at the college level. So we're still looking for players, I think, that will fit our system of being able to play, being able to possess, keep the ball. But at the same time, it's good to have variety and players with different skill sets, different backgrounds, because as you know, every situation, every opponent's a little bit different, so you might need to make changes in the moment.
Well, final thing here, we talked before Thanksgiving, this will air after Thanksgiving. What are you thankful for?
Oh, I wasn't ready for that. I think the opportunity, the team, living in Emporia. Honestly, I go to bed every night thankful, and I can really count my blessings. So my family, my friends, really the list goes on.
Well, we're thankful to have you here and thankful for your time. Thank you so much, Coach Jane Grimley Gunn, first-year head coach of Emporia State Soccer. Have a happy holiday season, and best of luck on the recruiting trail.
Thank you. You as well.
Tim and Dylan, back to you in the studio.
Well, obviously, it is not Tim and Dylan in the studio with Tim being out today. So Blake here with you along with Dylan as we bring in the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. And he, of course, is brought to you by Land County's number one mortgage lender, Emporia State Federal Credit Union. Contact Isabel Garcia or Jerry Norman for the credit union advantage in securing your first or next home loan. Equal housing opportunity. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to credit approval. NMLS number 424226. Mitch Holthus, boy, we don't talk to you the day after games a whole lot, but well, the Chiefs get it done again, didn't they?
Mitch, do we got you?
Yes, right here.
Where'd you,
ready to go.
Did you hear Blake's question?
Yeah. Blake, you there? Yep.
Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear me, Mitch?
Yo, Blake.
What? Yeah, with Tim being gone, I'm actually in. You cannot hear me?
Yeah, so he can't hear you.
Okay, go ahead and take it, Dylan. I'll call in on my phone.
Blake.
Okay. All right.
All right, Mitch, can you hear me now? I can't.
What? You can't hear me, Mitch?
I can.
Okay.
Okay.
I Sorry, we're doing this a little bit differently with Tim. Tim is out playing a little bit injured this week, so I'm filling in remotely for him. So apologize for that. Really appreciate you being on with us here today. But the Chiefs, you know, they kind of had to fight through some things on Friday. How did you guys kind of digest that Black Friday game?
Wow, just a lot to try to. When you put it in the context of the entire season, you're just shaking your head. It's an SMH. I put an emoji up there, and like I said on the game, at the end of the game, what a year! I mean, Ted Lasso's writers are blushing. Like, you can't. He's writing the script. It was just so many nutty things, and then to win on a muff snap off. So, yeah, a lot of things to work on. This is just feels like a copy and paste of the discussion we've had all year long. Of these 12 games, Chiefs 11-1, 7 have been at the end, and it's just crazy. But you're winning these games. You're not losing them, and the season could be a disaster. Now it's just set up to try to figure some things out and make a thrust into these last 5 regular season games.
Mitch, what's big now with this time off, knowing the Chiefs have played 2 games in a 5-day window, and now a little rest before back to a normal week next Sunday with the Chargers coming in?
Dylan, I know that you listened to every word or watched every episode of Defending the Kingdom podcast. It would have been the bye week. I think I might even have mentioned it on the show. So we're going all the way back to week 5, that the Chiefs are in the Tour de France this year. The way the schedule is set up, it's 5 games, then the bye. Was it too early? No. Not with a team that has played 3 years in 2, 6 years in 5, and 7 years in 6. That comes into play to answer your question, because if you look at this long journey the Chiefs have been on, amazing journey, but long and tough. Nobody else in the league has anything close to it. So 5 games a bye, 7 games, and now this next stop. Although it's just 48 hours, this is a stop on the Tour de France. And then these 5 games to try to capture the 1 seed coming up. This is an important 48 hours. Again, seems brief, but it's enough where the team has to back up. They've got to back up and figure out, first of all, they rest mentally and emotionally as much as physically, and then figure out these protection issues and coverage issues. Those are the 2 biggest problems. That's Captain Obvious. But then you also realize you've got increased assets. You've got Pacheco back, Amenahu back, and those 2 guys were impactful yesterday. They don't have to do it all. They can relate and work with other guys, but there's also some things to get excited about as you look at these next 5 games.
Mitch, you look at how the game played out yesterday with Mahomes and the Chiefs, and certainly one thing that I said, you know, as I was kind of just rambling on to start the show as we were, you know, working through some connection issues, was that it doesn't feel like the Chiefs are that far off. You know, you look at one of those scramble plays in the end zone where Mahomes throws it over the other shoulder and Kelce turned the other way. And I was wondering, you know, if Mahomes had just an extra second, and we talked so many times this year about how the Chiefs are just off by a click, and if he had that extra second, God, I'm losing my voice like Tim did, if he had an extra second in the pocket, would some of these big plays be getting hit? And, you know, people may not understand how big that extra second that the Chiefs' protection could give him, how big that could be for this offense in terms of turning field goals into touchdowns.
You know, question. I think it's a very good point, Blake, and it's why there's a lot of positives here to kind of cling on to, is the fact that you can see it coming. You can see it possibly coming with just a bit more time. Now, what was troublesome in yesterday's game was the inability to run the ball. The Chiefs, especially with Kareem Hunt on board, have been able to get 4 and 5 yards. Other than Pacheco's 34-yard run, and then Kareem had a 4-yard run later, the Chiefs got stoned in the run game. They were stonewalled. They have to have, and I'm excited, I think the run game's going to be there. But to your point, just one more click of time. And the fact that Pat has been hit so much, he's a little bit battered here, a lot battered, actually. But give him just one more second of time. Give him mental confidence that he's got that click of time. He can set his feet, set a throw, and we'll start getting some plays. And then with Pacheco thrown into the mix, maybe Hollywood Brown down the road, then you could get an offense to where you thought it would be when we were in training camp.
Mitch, I know with DJ Humphreys being inactive yesterday, I know he's got to have time to learn the offensive system. I know in the fourth quarter yesterday, moving Joe Tooney over to left tackle, you know, did you see any difference there with Tooney moving over when Wanye Morris was taken out of the game?
Well, it's hard to say, and I don't think I could really give an accurate response just because the game was different. We weren't in a situation where we're going to drive 85 yards. We were in a four-minute mode to try to close out the game, which we could not do. And, again, it would be looking at the video, but I don't think it was enough of a sample size to go, well, okay, great, yeah, Joe Tooney's it. Let's just move on with that. I don't think we can say that. And then with DJ Humphreys, I think there's going to be a push to get him there sooner and later based on what we just seen. There's a sense to me that they don't want to move Joe Tooney there permanently, or at least for another couple of weeks, or even play the Charger game with him there. Because here's the thing that we don't think about. You're taking Tooney out of his spot of strength. So are you weakening two spots in a way? Now, not like Mike Caliendo can't do it, but Mike's never been asked to do that. He's not been Nick Allegretti yet. So I think the feeling would be, gosh, we don't want to move Tooney because that's so back to the run game, power run game inside or zone run. Tooney's so good at it. You don't want to push him out of that. So I think there's going to be a move to get Humphreys ready fast. But what are you going to have with DJ Humphreys? Because fans have got to be careful to go, okay, we're good. We're there. We got it. We got John Alt there, and we got Willie Rofe there, so we're good to go. There's lots of questions there. And you're coming into a gigantic game with the Chargers that you could clinch the division. And they've got flesh beaters on the outside with Tui Pelotu and Bosa. So there's just a lot going on here. We have more questions than answers. But I think the push to get DJ Humphreys up and running is now even more urgent than before.
Well, I think another question that fans are going to have and probably that they'll have in the office as well is in terms of the defense, you had a Raider team that was last in the league in rushing yardage, outgained the Chiefs, and also, you know, Brock Bowers, maybe I undersold Brock Bowers in my mind mentally, and this is going to be, he's going to be the next Kelce in a few years. I don't know. But the Chiefs sure had a tough time on the outside with coverage with Bowers and also stopping the run game. What did you see defensively from the Chiefs on Black Friday?
Yeah, I'm almost as more concerned about that. Well, I'm not. It's equal concern. But we know about the protection issues at left tackle. They have been there all year. Defensively, that has been the staple. And ever since the scoring drive by Baker Mayfield, I still see Trey Palmer running his over route to my sideline in the Tampa Bay game to tie the game in overtime. There's been an issue with the Chiefs secondary and also to try to get pass rush. Now, we've stuffed the run game. And so for the Raiders to run yesterday with, I mean, Sincere Richardson, like he's a practice squad guy, and Amir Abdullah's been in the league 10 years and he's really a third down back, that was an issue. The Chiefs got worked in the trenches. Now, Charles Omenihu helped. He helped a lot in both the run and pass game. But I don't know if J.K. Dobbins will play for the Chargers or not. They've got their game against Atlanta tomorrow. But, yeah, if you're giving up rushing yards, you've got a real problem. And the Chiefs are not giving that up. So what am I seeing? I'm seeing a little bit of fatigue. This goes back to Dylan's point. This defense is worn down a bit. And for them, I think a chance to back up a bit, recalibrate, and try to get some confidence back will be paramount in this little mini 2 days or 3 days they get off.
Well, the final thing for you, as the Chiefs, once again, because of the Black Friday game, well, we will still have the Chiefs Kingdom show for you on Monday at 6 o'clock, Country 101.7, and then a week off for the Chiefs, and they'll be back on December the 8th against the Chargers. Country 101.7 back on Sunday Night Football with a 7:20 kickoff. Any early things that you have in terms of thoughts on playing the Chargers?
They're much better. They, along with the Broncos, have improved. That's a sign that they're better coached. How does a team, do they improve throughout the season? And especially in the formative stages of a coach's regime. And we've seen that now with Sean Payton, with Bo Nix and the Broncos, but we're seeing it with the Chargers as well. The Ravens had to make tough plays to beat them. But we're sitting here also looking at the fact that the Chargers have four losses and we have one. You can knock them out at least for the division title, which is the first box you have to check. And that's where you have to zero in on them. They're better, but they're still beatable. And the Chiefs still have to go in there and realize, hey, we can win the division for a ninth straight year. The other thing I thought, and I mentioned these at the end of the game, but I think we'd be remiss if we just left these set, is the fact that the Chiefs have now won 14 consecutive games, one possession games. 14 straight, including the playoffs.
Amazing.
It's stupid. This
it's
is an
impossible.
All-time NFL record. It's impossible. In the NFL, it's impossible. NFL record, all time. Of the teams that started 10-1, the Chiefs, with their scoring differential, were 60th of 61 going into last night. Wow. We're going to be, what, 54 plus 54. Only one team had a lower scoring differential in that time span. It was the 1976 Raiders. But they went on to win the Super Bowl. All right? The Chiefs clinch a playoff berth with 5 weeks to go. It's the first team to do that since the 2009 Colts. And in 55 seasons, Blake and Dylan, 55 seasons, there have been 10 teams that have clinched a playoff berth with 5 weeks to go. Eight of those 10 went to the Super Bowl. Four of those eight won the Super Bowl. And the last team to do it, the 98 Broncos. But it puts that game, that crazy 1917, again, we've had the toe-off game, the block-off game, the walk-off game. We've had walk-off field goals, walk-off touchdowns. Now we have the muffed, snap, fumble, rooski game. All right. All of that stuff is nuts. But the moment needs to be, we just need to capture the moment here and go, what just happened? Well, what just happened is some pieces of history here that we at least, you know, inhale while we move on.
Boy, yeah, and there's no way to follow that up. Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs, brought to you by Lyon County's number one mortgage lender, Emporia State Federal Credit Union. Contact Isabel Garcia or Jared German for the credit union advantage in securing your first or next home loan. Equal housing opportunity. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to current approval. NMLS number 424-226. Hope that you're able to move on with your family this weekend, Mitch. Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Same to you. Go Burlingame Bearcats. And they've turned into a force in Topeka West Chargers. And Dylan, happy Thanksgiving to you, too, and to your family. So, Blake and Dylan, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, our Thanksgiving's today. Yeah.
Yes, I figured.
Yep, yep. I still got one more, Mitch, and going to the 3A state title game in Hutch, Andale Indians.
You're doing a 3A title game?
No, I'm just going. I'm just going.
Oh, nice. All right, well, go get them, man. That's going to be exciting.
Anything on the menu you're looking forward to today?
This whole menu? Oh, my gosh, it's full. This is one of my favorite days of the year. I don't mean food menu. I mean football menu.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, so traditional. I'm kind of a ham guy, but a turkey white meat, I'm just so traditional Smith Center. Mashed potatoes and creamy corn. I mean, my wife makes awesome creamy corn. Anyway, the football menu, man, so this is my favorite day in many ways. The state, although we had some yesterday, the state championship games, and love it. Big college games. These are rivalry day, and And for you guys, Kansas can get bowl eligible, and Lance Leipold is going to be Big 12 Coach of the Year, should be. And then
K-State's got Farmageddon tonight. They get a ninth win and have this infinitesimal chance of making the Big 12 championship game. There's just a lot of drama today, but this is a fun day.
Yeah, we're going to look forward to it. Hope you enjoy it, Mitch. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, you guys.
Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs, here with us on Saturday Morning Sports Talk. And, Dylan, yeah, I think who does Andale got today?
They have Hayden. So
Hayden, that's right.
Centennial League foe.
Okay, so the Indians and the Wildcats. Well, you enjoy that. That's down – where is that today?
That's in Hutchinson.
That's at Hutch, right?
So 3A and 1A are being played at Hutch today.
That's right.
And then so it's Conway, Springs, and Centralia in the 1A game. The 8-man games and 6-man are being played in Greensburg, of course, Emporia Welch Stadium, hosting 4A and 6A.
Yeah, a ton of football today. Take us through it, Dylan.
Yeah, so real quickly, at 1 o'clock at Welch Stadium, Bishop Miege, the 15 seed out of the East, taking on the top seed out of the West, Andover Central, 1 o'clock kickoff. And then at 7 p.m., Hayes and St. Thomas Aquinas. And Aquinas has run the table, moving up from 4A to 5A. And Hayes has made a Cinderella run through the 5A West as the 9 seed. They had to defeat Great Bend, who was the 1 seed, along with Goddard Eisenhower, who was the 2 seed, who Emporia High saw in week 9. So, and yesterday's game at Welch was pretty impressive. It came down to the final 10 seconds with Gardner Egerton winning 36-33 over Manhattan. Manhattan had a Hail Mary, and they just threw in the double coverage and just was batted down. But sure. I wouldn't be surprised if there's two other great football games at Welch Stadium, and of course the other ones in Hutch and also in Greensburg as well. Central Plains is in one of those. They're taking on Hoxie. They saw Chase County in that regional round, the rain game is what I'm calling it, but Central Plains, who knocked out Chase County, playing for a state title today. Axtell playing Victoria today, and then the sixth man is Cunningham and Weskin. So
okay,
those are all
plenty of football for high schools as we wrap up the high school football season here today, and some good football coming up on our airways as well. We've got Baylor and Kansas today with an 11 o'clock tip-off, 9:30 pregame, and then a 5 o'clock tip-off for Kansas basketball against Furman. No Crimson and Blue show because of the extended KU football postgames. We'll have that for you at 4:30. Kansas State will be taking on Iowa State in Farmageddon at 4:30 pregame, 6:30 for the kickoff coming up tonight on Country 101.7. And then tomorrow we've got Kansas State men's basketball for you beginning at noon on Country 101.7. I will be back at Emporia for the Peru State Bobcats coming in to face the Emporia State men in their home opener. Yes, finally, the home opener coming up on December 1st. And then 49ers and Bills on Sunday Night Football. Dylan, have a great rest of your weekend. Appreciate your help getting this figured out this morning.
Thank you, Blake. And everyone, tune in tomorrow for the Hornets and go out and support them at White Auditorium. Busy next week coming up for us. Of course, MIAA opener for the Hornets and Lady Hornets, and Emporia High basketball coming up. A long road trip to Liberal, so you guys won't hear me on Sports Talk next week. Our area high school basketball schedule will start with Chase County and Osage City coming up on Friday. So yeah, basketball
all coming up for you right here. You can get the full calendar online, kvoe.com/calendar. This is KVOE Emporia for Dylan. I am Blake. Have a great rest of your Saturday.
I'm Jim Bass.